All right, this is take two with Assembly Mayor Kim Driscoll, and I apologize for that, having screwed up the first one. But, Madam Mayor, let's just get right to the chase. Superintendent search is in its stretch run now.
Yeah, we're excited about the candidates that we have that are interested in this position. We've got four finalists after a screening committee spent some time interviewing just about nine candidates and narrowed it down to four. So the next role is for the school committee to interview folks and hopefully come to a decision at the end of this week.
In my experience as an educator, we had a lot of superintendents come in from the outside, and they actually stated and were hired, well, this is my last job, I've come here to retire. I don't get that feeling from Salem. So maybe a quick thumbnail of your finalists?
Sure. I just would start out to say our community profile that we spent some time kind of understanding what are the key skill sets we think in the next superintendent talked about one being a strong communicator really being important. And I think another component was really wanting somebody who would stay, who would grow the people who were here, bringing some sustainability to our efforts. We've had a lot of transitions, a lot of staff turnover, and it was really helpful when you're constantly, bringing in new leadership. So we're excited about this, not necessarily being someone who's going to retire here, but certainly somebody who wants to build a model so that when they leave, things don't fall apart, right? We want someone who brings out those foundational skills. So we've got four candidates. Dr. Lorenzo Garcia currently works in the Revere Public School System. He was the high school principal who was responsible for their successful turnaround there. Revere is known as one of the best urban high schools in the country. Mm-hmm. He's now working in central office, doing a lot of data and accountability work, and brought, I think, local experience and gateway city experience. Ben Lummis. Ben is the current interim superintendent in Brookline. He's been part of their senior leadership team for the last 5 to 7 years. He was also a teacher, an educational consultant. He's got a really varied background. Dr. Steven Shrike. He is the current superintendent/receiver in Holyoke for Holyoke Public Schools. He was brought in 5 years ago to help address some of the needs of their school system. DESE actually appointed a receiver, the Department of Elementary and Secondary Ed, because they were concerned about their performance in Holyoke. Mm-hmm. And by all accounts, he's helped transition the school district to one that is much higher functioning, increased graduation rates, built a strong early ed program, increased their dual language program, definitely brings a strong base of experience to a city like ours. And finally, Erin McMahon. Erin has a varied background. She's worked in Denver Public Schools. She's been a network superintendent there. Has worked in New York City. Certainly been a teacher as well. All of these folks have been teachers in their careers at one point or another. She's currently working for KIPP, a charter school network at the national level, doing their academic achievement efforts. And they were all, like I said, pretty impressive group. The pool was pretty impressive. So narrowing it down to four folks who want to be here, are excited about the opportunity to help us, is pretty exciting.
It sounds exciting. It sounds like tremendously qualified candidates. Let's shift gears a little bit now and talk a little bit about where the city budget is, and maybe referencing the schools, because there's supposed to be money coming down from the state to in a different way.
Yeah, we're just getting started. Department heads are getting started preparing their budgets. We'll spend the next 2 months, 6 to 8 weeks, really honing in on what the needs are, where we think we want to make any additional investments to better serve the needs of the community. The process for us is very much dependent upon what we're going to be seeing in state resources, which at present, we're a little concerned. The new ed dollars, the school sweepstakes funding that's helped a lot of gateway cities so far for us is looking like a very small increase. Right now we're at $136,000, which isn't going to buy us a lot of even pay for some of the existing expenses, let alone some of the newer things we're hoping to invest in. So we're going to work through that. We've got two more shots and bites at the apple with the budget through the House and the Senate. We're working with our legislative leaders to hopefully increase that sum.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I've asked you this before, and it's a continuing question about public housing and about affordable housing in the city as cities and towns continue to transition, struggle with infrastructure and everything else. So what's the status of that?
Yeah, it's the number one issue we're really facing as a community is the affordability of housing. As Greater Boston's just become such a desirable place to live, we've seen the rents in Salem increase dramatically, housing prices as well. But rents are the things that impact people who live here, who work in our service industry, or those who want to stay here, who've been here a long time, haven't bought, and now are seeing rents rising much quicker than their incomes are rising. We've been looking at a number of policies. Last year, we attempted to pass an accessory dwelling unit, or an ADU, essentially allowing in-laws to be created in homes. It wasn't successful. We're hoping to resubmit that, along with an inclusionary housing ordinance, trying to find some policy considerations that will help build affordable housing as housing growth in Salem happens. In addition, we're looking to leverage public land, so where we have public assets, to think about lowering the cost of constructing housing by making the cost of land acquisition much more affordable. It is by far one of the toughest challenges that communities are facing, especially for a place like Salem that has long had a mix of different people, different income levels, different cultures. When you become a high-priced area, that changes. And we don't want to change the character of Salem. We like the fact that we've got a hip, historic mix of people who live here. But that's in danger if we don't really address this housing issue head on.
And do the what's the relationship? I think I've asked you this before, but the relationship between Salem city government and the state government in terms of the local representatives, the local state representative, the local state senator?
Oh, I think we've got excellent representation in Paul Tucker and Joan Lovely, both of whom were either local officials or elected officials or appointed official, former police chief, Joan, a former city councilor. And they've been fabulous to work with. I think they really recognize the importance of this issue in Salem. Joan represents other communities on the North Shore as well. Diagnosing the problem isn't the hard part. You know, it's curing the illness that is really, really tricky because there's only so much you can do as a government entity, right? We need private sector and public sector to come together and help build the sort of housing we need in our community at a time when people, you know, don't always want additional housing happening. You understand some of those fears and trepidation, but we also know that if we don't build new housing, we're never going to get out of this affordable housing crunch that we're in.
Well, I want to pull back a little bit now and look at a larger geographic area, if I can. There are two things that are on my mind, and I guess we'll start with the local then and go from there. You were at an event featuring Joe Kennedy for the Senate. Would you like to tell me about that?
Yeah, sure. I've been at several events. He's been in Salem a number of times. He was in PBD last month, and over the weekend he was in Middleton. He's been, you know, running around the Commonwealth trying to talk about why he's interested in being a United States Senator, what skills he'll bring to it. I think he's a terrific candidate who recognizes the needs at the local level. He's not somebody who just swoops into town and wants to talk politics. He's really here to understand, particularly our most vulnerable, you know, community members, like what are the needs? We've been in our health center. We've been in at LifeBridge. We talk about education and early ed. Real changes that are necessary to meet the demands of a diverse city. And at the same time, I think he brings the heft of understanding like systemic changes that are necessary in Washington. So I'm hopeful.
One thing I noticed with Senator Edward Kennedy, over the years, whether you like him or don't like him, whatever his history was and so on, is that whenever he came to Gloucester in particular is where I would see him, he remembered people by their first names. And as you said, he was aware of the local issues. I haven't seen that with our current senators. I was going to say as much, but I really haven't seen it as all. And it sounds to me like you have that little bit of a connection anywhere with this candidate.
I think it's very true, and that's probably a good analogy. I mean, not just because he's a family member, but the ability to understand what's happening locally and then to connect that to what we need to do in Washington to help. That skill doesn't exist everywhere, and I want more. Like, I want more out of a United States senator. We are not going to be the strongest city we can be, the smartest city we can be, the safest city we can be without having a strong federal partner and having people who recognize that, want to know the issues, and then know how to make that systemic change and influence others to do so as well.
Well, that would require some working together, but we'll leave that for another day. Now, obviously, Tuesday, we're taping this, we're recording this on Monday, and, you know, Tuesday's the New Hampshire primary. After maybe your comments on the debacle, first of all, from Iowa.
Holy cocoa, right? Unbelievable. And, you know, it makes Democrats look like the gang that can't shoot straight. You know, that's definitely what you don't want to have happening. I don't know, obviously, all the details of what happened in Iowa. but it does really make you question, is this, you know, the kind of the best approach to selecting a candidate when things like that happen. I do appreciate the difference between New Hampshire, where you actually have, it's a primary, right? Just the way it would be in Massachusetts and a number of other states. It's not run by a party. It's run by local elected officials. And at least that's a normal, there are regs, there are rules, there are laws, and it's a normal way of doing business. And hopefully, you know, something like that can be considered down the line in Iowa and other places.
For, I was going to say Gloucester, but for Massachusetts public officials who lean toward the Democrats or are Democrats, what is the view? What do you look at from the New Hampshire primary in terms of either outcome or who's saying what?
Yeah, I think it's such a strange year. It's hard to know what the impacts are going to be. Who would have thought what happened in Iowa would have happened, right? Normally somebody gets a bump out of that. It's momentum to go to the next place. Or you win Iowa and you end up, you know, somehow on the cutting room floor in New Hampshire, right? And so I think it's one of those years where we're seeing, you know, three or four candidates that are viable, you know, in the mix, and seem to have good organizations, well-funded. And then you've got candidates who haven't, who've skipped Iowa and New Hampshire pretty much altogether, but have resources or name recognition and are, you know, are still on the hunt. So it's a really interesting and unique year.
Finally, Madam Mayor, I don't quite know how to phrase the question, but on a local level, on a personal level, people sometimes we'll not talk about national politics because, you know, if I'm on the left, I have a friend on the right, we sort of don't want to end up slapping each other. How does that work with public officials when you get together for these meetings? Is it sort of hands off from national politics?
I mean, when we're in a government setting, we're probably talking about whatever the issue is beforehand. Right. But if there's socializing or kibitzing going on, I think there's a lot of real conversations and some good-natured jabbing and opportunities to recognize that no one candidate, no one party has all the answers, right? And there are things that you're able to talk about with candor when you're talking to colleagues that I think we all respect each other for the ability to do that.
Well, may that catch on and go somewhere else.
Right? At the heart of the problem.
Exactly. Thank you, Madam Mayor. That's Salem Mayor Kim Driscoll with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore.